This is BBC.
BBC Radio.
Six music. Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time.
And welcome to The First Time here on Six Music. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and talk about the seminal first musical moments that shape their lives and their careers. This week's guest makes music that is as individual, fascinating and as eccentric as his personality. We started to hear from him around 2002 with a Charles C. Leary album, a loose, lo-fi and beautiful collection of songs and musical sketches that seem to just appear from another, slightly stranger universe. From then he's released 10 albums, each one different and each one full of poems, love songs, tall tales and bedtime stories. Now, sometimes people say that a good interview should just be a conversation, and that's actually rarely the case. But here, as I've known our guest for more than a few years, this show is just that. I think we follow the whole first-time format, but not much. But it doesn't really matter. My guest on The First Time this week is Devendra Banhart.
Put me in your suitcase. Let me
Here we talk about Devendra's childhood in Venezuela and how the music of South America continues to inspire him, and how after moving to California, his time in art school gave him a passion for the musical avant-garde. He explains the pivotal role that folk icon Vashti Bunyan played in the start of his career, and how he felt when he found himself at the heart of the freak folk scene of the mid-noughties. We also talk about his most recent album, 2019's Ma, and its connection to Japanese electronic music and Luther Vandross. I mean, I say we discuss these things, and we kind of do, but it's a lot more freeform than that. But the first question I asked Devendra, as I do with all my guests, was when was the first time he was aware of music?
Well, I grew up in Venezuela, in Caracas, Venezuela, and the music that permeates the city, which is really almost, to me, a small little, like, it's a small structure in comparison to the jungle that is, like, slowly swallowing it. And what permeates that small structure is salsa and cumbia and merengue, and it's just everywhere, right? And then as you go further out into the country, you hear these more simpler and more but at the same time more sophisticated and beautiful sounds that are considered more folkloric, that really flow with the natural landscape a lot better. And it's really just the sound of the cuatro, which is the indigenous instrument of Venezuela, and it's called a cuatro because it has four strings, and that's the sound that kind of flows in and out of the valley.
Siempre lo vi, la mariposa no vaya.
And I guess I have that feeling that my first memories of music are, I can hear the smell of diesel, and I can hear the smell of mangoes. I can hear the jungle trying to slowly eating the city. I could hear this ominous sound. It's really the crickets at night. That sound. It sounds like the string section in Psycho. It's just slow. It's actually very violent and aggressive. But you get used to it. But it's like this amazing. It was very obvious to me that mankind is insane and so arrogant, and everything we build is so unsustainable, just because I could see and feel this jungle slowly consuming everything that we built.
Catena Veloso, would that be an early?
Yes, that would be an early thing. That would be the first kind of discovery of something that felt like my own, and really falling in love with music and really hearing something new that I hadn't heard. And that was really thanks to some degree, David Byrne for putting together a compilation called Tropical Truth, and my dad purchasing this compilation, and then me hearing a sound that was so, it was like my Beatles in a way, you know. It was so immediately like I could identify with it, and I immediately fell in love with it. It was just love at first listen, really. And this, there wasn't too much samba or bossa nova coming in, but that was still familiar to me. But Gaetano was just really his own thing. So up to that point, I just knew like genres of music. Okay, this is salsa. I know a salsa song. This is merengue. Okay, I can tell merengue. This is cumbia. This is, let's say, a little samba. This is bossa nova. That's what music kind of is. And then you hear Gaetano, and I go, okay, wow, this is something else. This is Gaetano Veloso, and there's nobody like him.
Gosto muito de te ver, leãozinho, caminhando sob o sol. Gosto muito de você, leãozinho. Para desentristecer, leãozinho, o meu coração tão só. Basta eu encontrar você no caminho.
filhote de leão, um raio da manhã, arrastando meu olhar como um imã. O meu coração é o sol, pai de toda cor. Quando ele lhe doura a pele ao léu, gosto de te ver ao sol, leãozinho, de te ver entrar no mar. Tua pele, tua luz, tua juba. Gosto de ficar ao sol, leãozinho, de molhar minha juba, de estar perto de você e entrar no mar. Gosto muito de te ver, leãozinho, caminhando sob o sol. Gosto muito de você, leãozinho. Para desentristecer, leãozinho, o meu coração tão só. Basta eu encontrar você no caminho. Um filhote de leão, um raio da manhã, arrastando meu olhar como um imã. O meu coração é o sol, pai de toda cor. Quando ele lhe doura a pele ao léu, gosto de te ver ao sol, leãozinho, de te ver entrar no mar. Tua pele, tua luz, tua juba. Gosto de ficar ao sol, leãozinho, de molhar minha juba, de estar perto de você e entrar no mar.
I hear genres of music, but it's all being filtered through him specifically. And that was maybe the first time there was this individualization of music. And I still feel that way about Caetano.
Until I started doing my research, I didn't know about him at all. So it's been...
Really? You've got a whole world to discover, and I'm so envious and happy for you. And, you know, I'd say one of the best covers of all time is Caetano doing a medley of Nega Maluca, Billie Jean, and it's so beautiful because it's continuing. You know, he's just finished a tour where he's playing with all of his kids. His kids are backing him up. I mean, how beautiful is that? And they're all amazing musicians. And he continues to refine and refine what he does. It's amazing. And also it's so amazing to still love music and to still turn to music. I guess when I say the record is about kind of a letter I would, or what I would want to tell my children if I don't have them or if I do, it's also an expression of gratitude to music's mothering qualities and art's mothering qualities, and the fact that we turn to music to expand and to be nurtured and to feel accepted and to feel loved. So all those qualities that a mother has, that's, I think, why we turn to art generally anyways. There's also two kind of archetypal kind of mother figures. One is Vashti Bunyan, sings on the last song with me. And Vashti was somebody whose music really got me through the beginning of my career.
When did you first meet her? Because it was,
like 20 years ago. I mean, maybe more than 20 years ago. I didn't meet her, I wrote to her, saying, I love your music,
yeah,
thank
right.
you for making your record. Would it be okay if I send you mine? She said, sure. Send her a cassette. She had a tape player, and she wrote back a very nice letter. And so I printed it out from an internet cafe.
And cassettes, internet cafes.
Yeah, right. You've probably never heard of these things. The world was black and white, I know. Right now, this is just what I'm sure, how you want to really expand your audience. I printed it out from the internet cafe, and I held on to that email till it was disintegrated, because I would just constantly keep it in my pocket as I had doors, you know, slammed in my face, literally and figuratively, and that kind of the humiliations and, let's say, the walk of fire of trying to begin a career without any connections, and with, you know, you don't have a label, you don't have a manager, you don't have a publicist, all these things that no relationship with booking agents. You're just kind of throwing yourself into it and hoping that something will happen, and that is setting yourself up for a lot of rejection. And so I had this, but I was okay with it, no, because I knew Vashti liked it, you know. So that kind of was the guiding, or like the solace through it. And not only was there that kind of knowing Vashti herself had said something kind about my music that kind of kept me going, but also I would turn to her music when I was just so lost and so sad and so lonely. And I still do that to this day with Vashti's music.
Some interesting places. I've made it on top of the Empire State Building. I've made it in the bowels of a cross-channel ferry on the back of a tour bus in the dark. I once made it in, despite a very high crosswind, outside a service station in Middle America. But I've been known to do it in my pyjamas, in my bedroom. And now everybody's doing it.
This is Guy Garvey's Finest Hour.
Six Music.
I play music you've recommended. I play new music. I play old music. Keep the names of every recommender in a special file. I will never forget you.
Guy Garvey's Finest Hour. This afternoon.
Now from 3 till 6.
On BBC Radio
6 Music.
I want to ask you about 007, Shantytown. Because this is a song that's important to you.
Yes.
Why?
And that song is still perfect. That song is still completely unlike anything I've ever heard. And the production is perfect. And It transports you. It's a transcendent song. I think it's transcendence, song.
When did you first hear it?
I first heard it thanks to Keenan Milton, which is a skateboarder who passed away. Very, very sad. He actually died very young. And he had a skate part in a skate video. And at the time, and to this day, I love skateboarding, and thanks skateboarding for introducing me to so much music. And I had fall in love with and been introduced to literally David Bowie, John Lennon's solo work. Because at that time, I'm just a teenager and I just think, oh, the Beatles are good, but I don't know about, you know, the John's solo work, which to me is the most powerful stuff. In fact, I like everyone's solo work the most. And I'd heard that for the first time, and David Bowie for the first time, and Bad Brains for the first time, and The Smiths for the first time, and Crass for the first time, and wow, this whole new world opens up thanks to skate videos. But then when I heard Desmond Dekker's 007 Shantytown, it completely just blew my world apart. It was like UFO music. It was like a UFO experience, you know. It's the And that's how that song, that's what did it for me. And after that, I was like wearing suits. I just like got into, I'm a rude boy, and I fell in love with Mento and Bluebeat and ska and rocksteady. And that was just like it. And like introduced me to Alton Ellis and Hortense Ellis and Prince Buster and everything Lee Scratch Perry did, which is, he's still the greatest producer. It's still like the most cosmic music. It's, I mean, I guess you can, I don't know, Sun Ra maybe is another contender for like truly visionary, you know. And then I moved into the second wave, and I fell in love with the Specials and Madness and the Selector and the Body Snatchers. And the Clash, even. And then it led into that stuff, because there's obviously some relationship. But it really was, it changed my whole world, and I was skateboarding in my oversized Salvation Army suit.
Charles C. Leary came out and people started to know about you. When your career isn't a career, you were just putting things out there, then people start to pay attention. How did that feel? Because other people have careers that are quite linear. You don't really follow.
I like that, though.
But
the fact that this, your career is not a career.
Yeah.
And it isn't. It doesn't feel like my career is a career. It feels like... it feels like, you know, the root of the word amateur, the etymology of amateur is amante, which is lover. And it's, I feel like I just love art and I love making music and I'm still an amateur. And it's important to stay an amateur in a way. And I still feel like an amateur, and I don't feel like I've had this like professional career, although I guess I have, and I'm very fortunate. But career weirdly implies this thing that I do in order to do something else. Or like, this is my job and I'm doing it and I'm working in order to do this other thing. But I'm not working to do something else. I'm working hoping to be able, and I'm fortunate that I can sustain this to continue to make art. But that's what I'm doing. I'm working to be able to continue to work. So yeah, my career, that's not a career. I can identify with that.
Ah.
Do you enjoy the attention that comes with putting out an album? I mean, Cripple Crow kind of brought you to a much wider audience. Did you enjoy that? Because if it's not your intent to, well, this is the record that I know, I'm writing these songs, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm writing these songs because I want to expand my audience, and many bands do that, and that's totally worthwhile.
Totally okay. We're not judging that whatsoever.
No, of course
and,
not.
And everybody, I actually appreciate that more than keeping all the music to yourself.
Mm.
Because I've got a couple, I've met many people, in fact, that have wanted to record but don't feel like actually this is the inverse, but I really respect people that feel that the music's for themselves and they write songs and it's for themselves, or they record music but it's really just for themselves and they just don't feel comfortable sharing it, or they have no desire to share it. That's fine and I respect that. But if you feel that you don't share your music for fear of what other people are going to think, or because you think it's bad, I really disagree, and I think that's incredibly presumptuous. I feel like you need to let us decide. Let me decide. And I would be so much... I'm almost going to start crying, imagining if like, for example, Caetano Veloso had decided to not release his music, to not share his music. You know, think of all these people that we love. Imagine if Bob Dylan just recorded and just sat on it, never shared it. So it's important to share your music. And I guess if you're a musician or a band and you decide to go for this other sound that's way more accessible, let's say, that's, you're kind of just expanding. And that can be really beautiful. It doesn't mean that it's artificial. It doesn't mean that it isn't honest. So it can be the most overproduced thing on the planet. But if it rings true, if there's honesty behind it, then wonderful, beautiful. Keep doing that, you know.
If I lived in China, I'd have some Chinese children. If I lived in China, I'd have some Chinese children. But out of my toes, my little black baby grows, and that's my fact. Well, if I lived in China, I'd have some Chinese children. Yeah, if I lived in China, I'd have some Chinese children. Well, if I lived in China, if I lived in China, well, out of my ears, my little black baby hears, and that's my fact. Now, if I lived in Russia, I'd have some Chinese children. Yeah, if I lived in Prussia, I'd have some Chinese children. Well, if I lived in India, they'd still be Chinese children. And out of now, if I lived in Ireland, I'd have some Chinese children. Yeah, if I lived in Ireland, I'd have some Chinese children. Well, if I lived in Spain land, they'd still be Chinese children. And if I lived in Greece land, they'd still be Chinese children. But out of my thumbs, my little red baby runs, and that's another fact, an unchanging fact. I still have Chinese children, and if I lived in Iceland, I still have Chinese children.
That was Chinese Children by Devendra Banhart from his breakthrough fifth album, Cripple Crow, from 2005. And we'll have more from Devendra talking about his love of John Cage, the Yellow Magic Orchestra, and Luther Vandross, all after the Six Music News.
Six Music. This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
BBC News at 2:30. This is Anthony Birchley. Boris Johnson has been discharged from hospital in London, where he spent a week being treated for the coronavirus. Downing Street says the Prime Minister will continue his recovery at Chequers. Our correspondent Helena Wilkinson, who's outside St Thomas's Hospital, has been reading the statement from Number 10.
The statement continues, on the advice of his medical team, the Prime Minister will not be immediately returning to work. He wishes to thank everybody at St Thomas's for the brilliant care he has received. All of his thoughts are with those affected by this illness.
Hospital consultants have told the BBC that some key medicines used in intensive care are in relatively short supply as wards struggle to cope with the pressures of the pandemic. The Royal College of Anaesthetists says stocks in some areas are a bit stretched. Dr. Ron Daniels is an intensive care consultant in the West Midlands.
They need drugs to keep them asleep, to keep them sedated. And some of those drugs we're running short of our usual stocks, and we're starting to use some more old-fashioned drugs. Many patients need drugs to support their circulation, to stop their blood pressure falling. And again, supplies of those are becoming challenged.
Spain has recorded an increase in the daily number of people dying from the virus after 3 days of decline. 619 deaths have been recorded in the past 24 hours. Police have charged a man alleged to have coughed on an officer in Nottingham with assaulting an emergency worker. 37-year-old Stuart Hunter has also been charged in connection with an alleged domestic incident. He's due in court tomorrow. The motor racing legend Sir Stirling Moss has died after a long illness. He was 90 years old. He won 16 Grand Prix between 1955 and 1961, and the comedian and actor Tim Brooke Taylor has died. He was 79 and had tested positive for COVID-19. He found fame as one of the goodies in the 1970s and as a regular on Radio 4's I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. That's 6 Music News. More in an hour.
Onion, oh, I love. Name. long as you're next to me.
Welcome back to the first time here on Six Music. I'm Matt Everett, and this is the programme where we discuss the seminal first musical moments from an artist's career, and that was Baby from 2009 by my guest on the first time this week, Devendra Banhart. One of the many interesting things about Devendra is how, while he's always released and recorded music that's hugely loved, he's never quite taken that step into the mainstream, into the wider conventional music business. Nearly, but not quite. Did you have lots of people, like, after, maybe after Baby, kind of saying, hey, Devendra, right, okay, right, okay, the market's there, man, okay, we can, there's a path you can take. Music is also a commodity. It's many things, and one of the things it is, it's got worth to people, and people spot that worth, and they want to exploit it for their own purposes, good or bad. Did that ever happen? Did that happen after Baby? Did people start to try and... Were people ambitious on your behalf?
I think that's why you hire a manager, in a way. And then you just say, just leave me out of it. You know, and I think that's what I was kind of saying earlier, is that I'm really not doing this in order to, like, make money to do something else. I'm doing this to be able to sustain a practice, right? So it's like, this thing is a practice. You realize after making a certain amount of records that I'm just never going to write a good song. I'm never going to feel like I've written a good song.
Really?
And it really also feels like you get close, and then as you approach that, you realize, oh, I want to try something else. And it's just the nature of creating, I think. Towards the end of the record, I started to listen. I heard I heard an album. And I thought, oh, this is what I want to do. What was I thinking? This record's a, there's nothing, I don't want to make this, I would never listen to this. What was I thinking? This is the other thing is what I want to do. And it just so happens with every record. And so you realize there's no kind of destination with creation. You just are practicing. And it's this exploration. And it's the same thing with painting. It's like, I need 8 million years to maybe get just the tiny bit of a brush stroke that feels right. That's how much time you need. And which, obviously, we have no time. And so it's this, there's no arriving, really, with art, I think. It's just this constant exploration. And it requires practice. And that practice requires discipline. And the paradox is that there's so much freedom in discipline. That's where you find your freedom, is in discipline, right? So you work on your thing. And I've had managers that's all I want to do. And you take care of everything else. But please, you know, try to be nice to people while you do it. My, like, way of countering the fact that it felt so clean was singing it in one take without warming up my voice. And that was one of the songs on the record that Daniel Lenoir mixed. And he's a great guy. He's this wonderful guy, and he has this gear that's like the gear. It's like you run this through this song, and suddenly it sounds like $1 million. You know, he took this. I was like, oh my god. So the way to countermeasure that was to just was to really sing it in one take, because the music sounded so clear. I wasn't used to it. It was crazy. But all of that stuff is incredibly subjective.
Split all the little children. They all hide in front, in the middle, and in the behind. La da da da. And because my nose has froze, but I can keep on smelling. I could smell my little day away. I could smell my whole day away. Na da da da.
take them out dancing. I could take my little teeth out and I could show them a real good time. Da-la-la-la. Well, a real good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time, good time, a good time, a real good time.
This is
BBC Radio
6 Music.
Please put your hands together for Kim Gordon!
This is Kim Gordon sitting in for Iggy Pop. I love this song and it sort of makes me cry when I hear it.
With 6 Music on BBC Sounds Now,
Kim Gordon.
It's not that it's nostalgic. Well, it is nostalgic, I have to confess. Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. I can't do Iggy's voice at all, but he's one of my favorite all-time rock and roll singers.
Kim Gordon, in for Iggy Pop. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
6 Music.
John Cage. I think this is a point where music and art coexist or overlap or are the same. What is it about his work that you keep coming back to?
I think it's a kind of general philosophy. I mean, he's one of those kind of pedagogues that I can generally say I just love everything about them. So it's not a particular piece of music. It's his entire career, and he even to the point of his the way he looks. I mean, I'm like, I like looking at photos of John Cage. That's all. I'm happy with that. But his approach to music, his approach to visual art, and his kind of absorbing and creating no boundaries and distinctions between disciplines is what I really always found so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard that line, I have nothing to say and I'm saying it, it opened up so many doors for me, because at that time there was this concern about like being an artist, like why would you be so irresponsible to be an artist? I mean, you've got to have, or you've got better have lots to say, or I don't know, just all these concerns of that we're kind of swimming through art school, and there was no sense of support for art that's really just trying to either express something spiritual or vulnerable or beautiful. It was really about being commercially viable, and so everything was kind of everything was. And what was encouraged was kind of digital work, learning how to build a website and design. And the thing is, I think those things are very important and incredibly artistic and wonderful. But the fact that I wanted to paint or use just ink and paper was like so naive and so silly. And what are you thinking? And so I didn't really feel that connected with most of the curriculum actually in college until I met Bill Berkson, who was my poetry teacher, and he really encouraged that. And of course, we all get into poetry for the money, so that really worked out. But yeah, John Cage, I just was so I love that he was really interdisciplinary. You know, of course he's so well known as a composer, but really he's also an incredible poet and an incredible visual artist and an incredible thinker and an incredible amateur mycologist. I mean, the guy knew how to pick a mushroom, which is no small feat.
And I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was part of his practice, to go out into the woods in, I assume, Northern California, and then on the East Coast with his basket, and he knew which mushrooms you could pick, and that became part of his practice. And then, of course, the fact that he was introducing the world to Eastern philosophies and Eastern practices, there were these introductions to the East. And that, for me, wasn't super exotic, because I grew up around photographs of my guru and statues of the Buddha, and I was very fortunate in that sense. But it was really beautiful to see these artists that were incorporating that into their work as well. So we're talking about Nick Cage, right? I loved Tokyo Drift. Is that the name of his what's his last film? Yeah. Actually, I did really like The Weatherman. I think The Weatherman is a totally underrated masterpiece. I think it's one of the great comedies.
First hear Yellow Magic Orchestra?
Ooh.
Because there is a link here.
Yeah. This is weird. It's weird having a conversation with someone that... Yeah, this is weird. You're asking me questions that... this is just bizarre.
What,
this
good? Good bizarre?
Yeah, these are
bizarre?
Good questions, and it's throwing me off. I'm like, I'm just so used to making up everything and not really listening to the question that this is throwing me off. I don't like that you're doing a good job. Could you be a little worse at your job?
Because, I mean, they're regarded as being hugely influential, and I think that's underplaying how important
they
are.
I think the way that people talk about Kraftwerk, I think the Yellow Magic Orchestra deserves that same kind of space. But those that know know, and I think that their influence and their what they did in that short time is being celebrated more and more and discovered more and more. And then what's beautiful is that you can also discover an entire world coming from the three members of that band and all of their side projects that continue on to this day. And in fact, the song that we released is called Canto Ryongaku, which means country music, and it's really a reference to a Harumi Hosono song. Harumi Hosono, of course, was a member of the Yellow Magic Orchestra, one of the great producers and songwriters, and one of my heroes, many people's heroes. And in Japan, in fact, the last time I saw him play, I said to someone next to me, I was like, what's the equivalent to Harumi Hosono in the West? And they said, oh, John Lennon. Of course. And Harumi Hosono has a song where the whole song's in Japanese, but at one point he goes, country music in English.
Country music,
and so this song is this kind of reversal where I say Kantori Ongaku.
Traveled far, but you're still where you are. Look out. Kantori Ongaku.
That really doesn't have anything to do with the song. I think the song maybe has more to do with the following line, which is shikata ganai. Are you familiar with shikata ganai?
No.
Well, shikata ganai is what you say when you find yourself stuck in traffic and there's just nothing you can do about it. So in Japan, it's equivalent to c'est la vie. You go, shikata ganai, which is a very helpful tool. Because there are some things we cannot avoid. And so we have two options. We say shikata ganai, or we just sit there suffering. And, you know, so there's what that's about. Yeah, I love the Yellow Magic Orchestra, and I love so much Japanese music. I mean, so much Japanese music. So much Japanese music. Although lately I was listening to Luther Vandross's Never Too Much and thinking that is almost like my favorite city pop song. It's a fine song. It's such a refined, fine song, right? And city pop is this genre of Japanese music that's like romanticizing corporate culture in a way that I think only Japan can do, where it's like everything but the realities. Of course, you're being overworked till you die, but somehow you can like it's romanticizes and sells this like 80s movie version of corporate culture that is so seductive. And so it's just like super high end production, just the smoothest, silkiest rhythms, and the lyrics are just about like sleekness and like nice suits and architecture. It's almost like, you know, Paris is Burning, this documentary about the ballroom scene in New York City, which was kind of fetishizing this other world that they it was so inaccessible to that community that they created their own version of it, which was 20 times more interesting. But also it's an incredibly sad documentary, but I highly recommend it. I was just thinking about how Luther Vandross actually has the best city pop song. Never Too Much is a city pop masterpiece. What were we talking about?
I was going to ask you what the final song we should play is, but is I guess Luther Vandross.
Oh, please. I mean, if we're trying to make up for my conversation, my portion of this conversation, then please play Luther Vandross.
It's been lovely to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
That was the amazing Never Too Much by Luther Vandross. The final choice of my guest here on The First Time this week, Devendra Benhart. So as we speak, there's a load more First Time podcast episodes to download on BBC Sounds. There's Tom York, Dave Grohl, Janelle Monáe, and there's a load more shows from the archive to stream as well. So you've got Frank Black, Marianne Faithfull, Björk, DJ Shadow, Robbie Robertson, loads of them, as we say, all up on BBC Sounds. I will be back next week with a brand new First Time. Until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
6 Music.
Right now, it's Guy Garvey's Finest Hour.
Letting him